Here is a question I received from Megan. Dear Dr. Kenner, I have difficulties relating to irrational guilt. I haven't done anything especially bad. This is guilt for things like wanting good things, thinking for myself, never disagreeing with anyone. I believe it is somewhat related to my upbringing. I've been like this for a long time, and I'm 30 years old now. If there's a way to stop it that I don't know about, I would love to hear about it. Thanks so much, Megan. Well, Megan, I can tell you that there is a way to turn that around, and it's effortful, and it's fun to lift off unearned guilt. So let's talk about guilt and unearned guilt. One step on the way to eliminating what you're identifying as irrational guilt, what I call unearned guilt, is just being aware that there are two flavors of guilt. One flavor is guilt that you earned. You lied to someone. It might be just a little white lie, but still you feel guilty. Oh, your hair looks lovely. Oh, God, her hair was awful. Or you might have stolen from somebody. Maybe a kid steals from a parent, you know, goes into the purse and takes money and feels guilty. Honey, that's earned. Maybe you lied at the movie theater to get in, saying that your kids were younger than they were because they look younger, and you feel a tinge of guilt. That's earned guilt. And there are, of course, a range of examples. The other type of guilt is guilt where you did nothing wrong. It's unearned guilt, and you're calling it irrational guilt. It's guilt that you didn't earn. And it's so important to be able to tell the difference when you experience guilt. You know, is this earned or is this unearned guilt? And in therapy, I would do an exercise with my clients when they felt at home with me and comfortable, where I would tell them I am going to do a role play that I do all the time with people. And basically, I went into trying to induce guilt, making them feel guilty. And at the beginning, there wasn't even any content. I would say something like, I have never had a client do what you're doing. Pause. I'd say, what are you feeling? Guilty. Why? What did you do wrong? They say, I don't know. And I said that's, you need to identify that. There's no content there, and yet you're feeling guilty. You need to be able to look at me and say something like, Ellen, what's your problem? You know, why would you say that? Tell me what's bothering you, and then I'll decide how I evaluate that and you. So that's just a quick example, but I would do a series of exercises that would help a person feel what unearned guilt felt like. It has a different emotional feeling than earned guilt, and you do want to be able to differentiate those. And so you already have that awareness, and you also are aware of the areas in which unearned guilt is attacking your life and happiness. And they're the big areas: valuing, wanting good things for yourself. This is talking about your personal values, and values are both material, you know, whether it's a new dress, a new car, a new home, or things like a good job, a good college education, and spiritual, a good relationship, a good romantic relationship, self-esteem, so wanting good things for yourself, and thinking for yourself. Well, who else is going to think for you? You know, our parents guide us when we're young, but even when we're young, we go through the terrible twos, which is learning how to think for ourselves. We love that psychological independence, and you know that you feel guilty if you disagree with anyone, so you could learn some assertiveness skills to learn how to speak your own mind in situations when you disagree. And it could be just, I see that differently. You know, there are things that you can say to someone. You don't want to self-betray. So most of us, including myself, during our childhood, we're taught or absorbed from our parents, teachers, or our religious leaders that there's something very bad and selfish with wanting good things for ourselves and thinking for ourselves, and there's something good with obeying our parents or obeying our religious leaders and never disagreeing with anyone and never questioning them. So it's hard to challenge those childhood messages. Many times we don't adopt them overtly, we just inadvertently adopt them. So it is not impossible to challenge them, though. That's what cognitive therapy is so good at doing. And it's also a pleasure to learn the skills to do that. So you don't want to be trapped in a no-win situation where you feel like if you're your own person, if you don't self-betray, then you're a morally bad person. And if you do self-betray, if you do self-betray, then you're a good person, but then you're not happy. So how do you start to change? Well, you want to learn how to dismiss that unearned guilt that you've learned to identify with contempt or just with a laugh. Like, it doesn't matter. I never had to take that seriously. I recommend the books by Ayn Rand, The Virtue of Selfishness, and by that she means self-esteem, not the mean, rotten person, and The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. Those books are powerful, life-changing experiences. And you can also read the book that I wrote with Dr. Edlock, The Selfish Path to Romance, How to Love with Passion and Reason. The first chapter is free online. You can go to Amazon.com or selfishromance.com. And we focus on how to value yourself in a chapter addressing otherism, called altruism, self-sacrifice, how not to be a doormat in your own life. Instead, how to cherish yourself. And when you have a partner, obviously, cherish your partner without either one of you having to self-betray. That's a win-win moral code, and I wish you the best with that. This is Dr. Ellen Kenner on the Rational Basis of Happiness. Toll free, 1-877-DRKENNER.
Here's an excerpt from The Selfish Path to Romance by Dr. Ellen Kenner.
Here's an example of two people with a conflicting sense of life discovering each other. Alicia met Daniel on a blind date. He was financially well off, but he wore an old t-shirt and his hair was dirty and unkempt. Alicia asked him what he did for a living and he replied, computers and stuff. She asked him why he liked his work. He didn't know, except that it was fun sometimes. She asked him what he wanted in life. He had no long-range goals. She asked him what books he liked. He didn't read books. He watched TV and played video games. Instead of looking at her, he looked at the ceiling or at other people in the restaurant. Alicia was an attractive, successful, and ambitious lawyer who loved reading and developing her mind. She couldn't stand Danielle and felt totally invisible to him. Being with Danielle, she felt as though he was from an alien universe. His sense of life was opposite to hers.
You can download Chapter 1 for free at drkenner.com, and you can buy the book at amazon.com.